The next case to be heard this morning, number 2015-1191, Southwestern City Schools Board of Education versus Franklin County Board of Revision. And the appellant is the Board of Education. So we will hear argument from Ms. Thoburn.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Rochelle Thoburn, and I am with Rich and Gillis Law Group. I am here today on behalf of the appellant, Board of Education of the Southwestern City Schools. In order for the administrative process of tax appeals to provide proper and just results, each party and tribunal, when acting in accordance with their statutorily mandated duties, creates a balance or check to one another. This case illustrates the fundamental imbalance and absurd results that occur when tribunals fail to act in accordance with the laws of this state. The breakdown in the system occurred at every level in this case. First, the BOR improperly reduced the value of the property when the complainant never met her initial burden of proof. Then, because there was no discernible support for the replication of the BOR's decision in the record, the Board of Education had to go so far as to subpoena the auditor's representative to the BOR to the BTA hearing to testify in an attempt to meet our burden of proof at that level. Through that testimony, it was revealed that the BOR completely rejected the property owner's evidence, but apparently conducted approaches to value from information it got on their own after the BOR hearing. It was also determined that this information at no time was presented to the parties, and it was never certified in the statutory transcript to the BTA. When reviewing this case, this court must first examine the errors occurred at the Board of Revision level. When the complainant never met her initial burden of proof, the case should have ended there. This is so because it is the auditor's duty to value property, not the BOR's. The auditor's value is presumed to be correct, and the BOR may only change the value of the property if there is a determination that the auditor's value is incorrect. The testimony at the BTA hearing revealed that there was never such determination made. In fact, the BOR rejected the property owner's evidence, illustrating that that board did not think she met her burden of proof. By determining its own value after the BOR hearing and not based upon the property owner's evidence, the BOR essentially went from being an independent tribunal to placing itself into the shoes of the complainant to meet her burden of proof for her. The absurd result of this action is that a complainant can essentially meet its initial burden of proof by the filing of the complaint. Like in this case, they never need to present any evidence at all. This contradicts the complainant's initial burden of proof and a vast history of case law out of this court. The lack of evidence at the BOR level also means that neither Bedford nor North Point apply to this case. First, it's important to note that Bedford does not apply just because a Board of Revision changes value. If that were the case, then that would mean that that board's decision has a presumption of validity. This court has already determined that is not the case. These cases only apply when a complainant meets its initial burden of proof, which was not done here, and when the BOR reduces value based upon and consistent with the complainant's evidence and opinion of value, also not done here.
In an earlier argument, there was some discussion of whether the statutes authorized the Board of Revision to conduct its own investigation and so forth. What is your position on that?
The statute does indicate that the board shall investigate complaints. I don't believe that is clearly defined. In this court's decision in Elkin Metals, for example, the court determined that the Board of Revision has to undergo a two-step analysis. First, determine if the complaint is jurisdictionally valid, and then consider the evidence. That would seem to me that that's the evidence presented by the parties to the case. There's another section of the revised code that allows the Board of Revision to subpoena witnesses themselves to the hearing. I think that could also encompass its duty to investigate. Whatever this court defines as the BOR's duty to investigate, however, It cannot mean that the BOR can just arbitrarily change values when the complainant never met its initial burden of proof, because again, that would mean that it takes the burden of proof away that clearly should be there.
And the source of authority for the burden of proof are decisions of this court.
Yes.
But there's nothing in the statute that says that.
I don't know if there's direct language in the statute, but the decisions of this court are very clear that whoever brings the initial complaint clearly carries the burden of proof because the auditor's value is the default value. The auditor's value is, we presume that officials conduct their duties properly.
Now, it's clear, though, it's clear that the Board of Revision would have jurisdiction to do what it did.
Because in what way?
That the complaint was filed and was pending. And if, in fact, the Board of Revision has an investigatory power, that might be read to imply that it can go outside the hearing.
It could be read to imply that it could go outside of the hearing, but I think it's important to focus here that the BOR's duty to investigate, again, doesn't kick in, if you will, until the initial burden of proof is met, because otherwise, again, in order to warrant a reduction in value, you would merely need to file an initial complaint, and I think that's contrary to what this court has said in its case law. And also on that point, no matter what the BOR does, if this court holds that the BOR can go outside of the hearing to investigate information, at a minimum, it must be presented to the parties either at a hearing before the BOR or at the very least must be certified in the statutory transcript to the BTA, because otherwise the parties' hands are tied, if you will, on appeal, and they aren't able to either prove or disprove the validity of the BOR's valuation. So while in this case it's our position that the BOR should not have taken upon itself to search for information to meet the property owner's burden of proof for her, when it did, it was required under 57.1701 to certify that information in the statutory transcript to the BTA. The criterion in the statute is evidence offered, not admitted. So if this court would hold that the BOR is okay to go outside the record and consider information, that would encompass that information, although not admitted at the hearing before the BOR, was offered and considered by that board and was mandated to be certified in the statutory transcript to the BTA.
So the statute says that the Board of Revisions should certify as part of the record all the evidence that was offered.
Evidence offered in connection herewith the original complaint.
Okay. It does not say all evidence considered.
No, it does say evidence offered. So if the Board of Revision is offering that evidence to support its value determination, we believe that meets the criterion of that statute, and then it must certify that information to the BTA. Otherwise, on appeal, the parties don't have an opportunity to rebut that information if necessary. And if the evidence is not certified in the statutory transcript, the BTA is prohibited from affirming that value, because this court has held in subpoena that the BOR's value must be able to be replicated. If that information is not in the record, there's no way for the BTA to replicate that value. The breakdown in this case did not stop at the BOR level, but continued at the BTA level as well. The BTA is mandated to review a record de novo. This is so because the legislature in this court has recognized the inherent biases that may occur at the local level. To ensure that a party to a case in all 88 counties of this state are held to the same standard, and to ensure that property is constitutionally to be valued uniformly, the legislature created the BTA, a state entity removed from local matters who can review a record and provide what should be an unbiased, independent determination of value. The unique circumstances of administrative proceedings must also be recognized, and that the tribunal you appear before at one level may become a party opponent to you at the appellate level. All of this demonstrates the crucial role that the BTA's de novo review is. However, in this case, the BTA failed in their duties. First, the BTA applied an incorrect standard of review on appeal. Because the BOE's appeal to the BTA was initiated as a result of a legal error from the proceedings before the BOR, the BOE's burden of proof on appeal was not to prove a new value, but to show the presence of reversible error in the BOR's decision. The BOE was not required to provide evidence of value because it sought a return to the original auditor's default value. These principles are directly set forth by this court in the 2011 Vandalia-Butler case, but they are directly contradicted by the language of the BTA's decision in this case. In its decision, the BTA never mentioned or analyzed that the property owner never presented any evidence, any competent and probative evidence, to the BOR to support its reduction in value. The BTA never mentioned or analyzed that the BOR's value was completely unsupported by the record. The absurd result of the BTA's decision is that, according to that board, the only party in this entire process who is required to provide evidence of value was the Board of Education, the party who did not initiate the proceedings and does not have access to the property or information about the property. The second crucial legal error made by the BTA occurred when it affirmed the BOR's value, even though it could not be replicated in the record. Under the cases I've previously mentioned, Subpoena in 2011 Vandalia-Butler, if the BOR's value cannot be replicated in the record, there is no evidence by which the BTA can independently determine value, the BTA must revert to the auditor's default value. Again, in this case, the language of the decision itself contains factual inaccuracies, and the case law is misapplied. Further, the lack of support in the record for the BOR's decision showed that the BTA completely abdicated its crucial statutory duty to review the record de novo. This is the exact action this court sought to prevent in the 2011 Vandalia-Butler case, and that is exactly what is going on here. Ironically, while the county and BOE disagreed on many issues at the BTA hearing, one issue was agreed upon by both. The BOR decision should not be afforded a presumption of validity. Despite this court's prior admonishments of the BTA, and despite the explicit concession by the county that the BOR's decision is not to be accorded any presumption, the BTA merely deferred to that unsupported value. The specific testimony from the auditor's representative at the BTA hearing illustrated that all of the values and calculations used by the BOR were not only omitted from the record in this case, but have been in all cases for over a decade. Many of the calculations provided a value range. The gross rent multiplier used was the result of multiple gross rent multipliers on a sheet. So the specific gross rent multiplier used by the BOR was not listed at all on the sheet. It was a determination made by that board of, it wasn't even clear if it was an average of multiple gross rent multipliers. There was never any explanation as how the BOR arrived at its specific calculations or final numbers. There is also no explanation as to how the sales and income approaches to value that they apparently undertook were reconciled, or even if they ever were. The auditor's representative, the person who testified that she performed the calculations at issue, testified that the BOR's value was irrelevant. She testified that she could come up with any value. She could not, however, provide a means by which the BOR's value could be replicated to afford the parties to the case or the BTA an opportunity to verify the values. If the person who performed the calculations could not replicate them, certainly the BTA could not. In sum, the record in this case makes it abundantly clear that the BOR improperly reduced the value of the subject property. It was improper because the complainant never met her initial burden of proof and because the BOR's methodology for reducing the value of the property was flawed. Rather than acting as a safeguard to this action, however, and despite the BOE doing everything it possibly could to rebut the presumption of the BOR's value, the BTA merely blindly affirmed that value. Today, the BOE respectfully requests that this court find that the decision of the BTA improperly deferred to the BOR's unsupported value and reverse that decision on that unreasonable and unlawful basis. In the alternative, we also believe is within this court's purview to remand the case to the BTA with instructions that it perform its statutory duty to review the record and determine if there is evidence in the record from which it could independently determine value. And if there is not, to reinstate the auditor's original default valuation. Thank you. That's all we have, and we thank the court for this. Its time.
Thank you, Ms. Thoburn. There is no argument on the other side in this case, so this case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.